Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
Listening to the Windy City Queer Cast, show number 498. I'm Amy Matheny, and wow, it's been a really big week. I hope some of you are able to come out and see the big movie premiere, Scrooge and Marley, which we had at the Music Box last week and is still running for a few performances here this week, coming back Christmas week to the Gene Siskel. Well, currently, it's been running at the Music Box, but it was such a fantastic premiere. If I do say so, even though I'm a member of the cast, it just included so many Chicagoans working on the cast and crew and as extras and locations around the city. And it was just so exciting to see such a homegrown movie with so many Chicagoans in it and so many Chicagoans working on it as the credits rolled, whether people gave some money to help the film happen or were an extra or a character or worked on the crew. So many names that we all knew. And there was a lot of hometown pride as we filled the Music Box Theater this past Thursday. And so it was a big week, a big weekend, and it continues to flabbergast me that we are into the holidays. And I hope everyone is ready for all the holidays that are to come. And the movie really definitely got me in the holiday spirit and looking forward to many, many things this holiday season. And you know, I bet everybody's looking for the perfect gifts to give and the perfect parties to attend and things to wear. And I hope in doing that you will scoop up those people around you who you see who might be lonely or a little blue, having a blue Christmas this year. Scoop people up into your good fortune and your joy if that's where you are. And bring them along on that ride. Lift people up during this holiday season. I really think that's what the season is about. And one of the things that I love is to go see theater, as you all know. And we've been doing a few shows about some really great shows in town because there's just some significant art being made in Chicago, performing arts, and some amazing artists that I love to introduce you all to. And there is a wonderful show at Victory Gardens. My friend, Philip Dawkins, the amazing playwright, has written this show that the Sun-Times has highly recommended, says it's a wholly wonderful show, profound yet whimsical. It's called Failure, a Love Story, and Philip Dawkins is here with me on the show today to talk about his career. Many of you may have come to know Philip when he created The Homosexuals that ran here a year and a half ago. It was a huge hit in Chicago for About Face Theater, and now he has become a playwright in residence at Victory Gardens, and this is his first big show after The Homosexuals. So really cool to get to know Philip's career, which is really, really taking off. And also what's going on in the GLBT news, lots of entertainment news right now, and also some interesting news coming out of our nation's capital. And also what other shows are going on, because it is hot, hot, hot right now. Music, dance, theater. There's something to go do and be out and amongst this amazing creative city of Chicago under the twinkling lights. It's what's best about December. So sit back and I hope you enjoy the show with Philip Dawkins.
This December, Chicago's most beloved holiday tradition returns for 3 weeks only. Gather your family and friends as the Joffrey Ballet presents the 25th anniversary celebration of the Nutcracker. Revel in the magic with brilliant costumes, larger-than-life scenery, entrancing storytelling, beautiful artistry, and Tchaikovsky's famous score performed by a live orchestra. It's a grand showcase of talent, proclaims the Chicago Sun-Times, and the Washington Post calls it a theatrical event of irresistible power. It's America's number one Nutcracker at the Auditorium Theater, December 7th through the 27th. Tickets start at just $31. Order yours today. Best seats are going fast. Call 800-982-2787 or visit us online at joffrey.org.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Week in News.
In San Francisco, Mayor Ed Lee, Supervisor Scott Weiner, and former Mayor Willie Brown joined friends and family of slain Supervisor Harvey Milk and Mayor George Moscone on November 27th at City Hall for the 34th annual Candlelight Vigil honoring the two men. The annual event has grown out of a spontaneous demonstration that occurred November 27th, 1978, when former Supervisor Dan White assassinated the gay rights leader Ann Moscone.
President Obama nominated Judge Mitza I. Quiñones Alejandro, a lesbian, for a district court judgeship on November 27th. She currently serves as a judge on the Philadelphia County Court of Common Pleas, where she has presided over both civil and criminal matters. She received her J.D. in 1975 from the University of Puerto Rico School of Law and her BBA cum laude in 1972 from the University of Puerto Rico.
In Indiana, legislators are considering a constitutional amendment prohibiting same-sex marriage. Same-sex marriage is already illegal in Indiana, but lawmakers overwhelmingly voted last year to put that ban in the Constitution. It has to pass the State House and Senate again in 2013 or 2014.
A Missouri group may soon start circulating petitions for a ballot measure aimed at making it illegal to discriminate against gays and lesbians in that state. The initiative must still pass several administrative hurdles with the Missouri Secretary of State's office before supporters can start collecting signatures.
It's official. San Francisco has banned public nudity. Exemptions would be made for participants at permitted street fairs and parades, such as the city's annual Gay Pride event and the Folsom Street Fair, which celebrates sexual subcultures.
As fiscal cliff deliberations intensify, a coalition of more than 20 national LGBT organizations released Caught in the Budget Battle, How the Fiscal Showdown Impacts Gay and Transgender Americans. This report details how many federal programs, both directly and indirectly, function to support and serve the LGBT population, and lists negative outcomes as well. See the taskforce.org for the full report.
In New Hampshire, transgender state rep-elect Stacey Marie Loftin said she may fight to keep her seat. Loftin, who made history as the nation's first transgender elected official, initially decided to step down after news of her criminal record, serving 4 months in Belknap County House of Corrections following a 2008 credit card fraud conviction, became public.
The Associated Press is dropping words such as homophobia and transphobia from its style book. The suffix phobia is now defined in the AP style book as an irrational, uncontrollable fear, often a form of mental illness, and it says it should not be used in political or social contexts. If the AP ever covers anyone or anything involving derogatory remarks against gay people, it will be referred to as anti-gay.
GLAAD, GLSEN, and PFLAG denounced the Dr. Oz Show for airing an episode debating the merits of so-called reparative therapy and having a representative of the discredited National Association for Research and Therapy of Homosexuality as a, quote, expert. The groups urged Dr. Oz to stand with the entire medical community against this so-called therapy and to tell his LGBT viewers that he does not support the idea that their sexual orientation should be repaired.
In Montana, the debate over the state's so-called sodomy ban will resume in the 2013 legislative session. State Senator Tom Fassi, the Democrat from Missoula, has introduced a measure to repeal the state's almost 40-year-old sodomy ban that more specifically prohibits sexual contact or sexual intercourse between two persons of the same sex. Even though the United States Supreme Court ruled Montana's ban unconstitutional in 2003, Fassi said that only the legislature could take the words out of the state code.
The Congressional Hispanic Caucus has included protections for binational same-sex couples and comprehensive immigration reform among its new sets of principles. Binational same-sex couples currently face potential separation under immigration law. The Uniting American Families Act would address this situation.
In world news, in France, former First Lady Carla Bruni-Sarkozy has come out in support of the government's bill legalizing gay marriage and adoptions, despite the fact that her husband, ex-president Nicolas Sarkozy, opposes the measure. France's parliament is expected to consider the bill in January.
In India, hundreds of gay rights activists marched through New Delhi on November 25th to demand that they be allowed to lead their lives with dignity and that the government expand anti-discrimination laws to schools, workplaces, and public and private spaces. 3 years ago, the court decriminalized gay sex, which until then had been punishable by up to 10 years in prison.
In a controversial move, singer Elton John openly dedicated a two-hour Beijing concert to the spirit and talent of the artist-slash-political activist Ai Weiwei. As he told the audience, the crowd reacted with audible gasps. Ai, who has used his art to comment on human rights issues, attended the show and even met John before the concert.
A United Nations committee overseeing human rights issues approved a draft resolution that, for the first time, acknowledges the need to protect individuals from executions on the basis of their gender identity. The third committee of the General Assembly passed the resolution by a vote of 108-1, with 65 abstentions and 18 absences. Iran was the only country to oppose the resolution.
In entertainment news, award-winning writer-slash-director Del Shores, known for Sorted Lives and the American Queer as Folk, has announced that his next feature film project will be a film of his play Southern Baptist Sissies, funded entirely through a crowdsourcing campaign with Indiegogo. The film will star several original cast members, including Leslie Jordan.
PBS has renewed the British period drama Downton Abbey for a fourth season. Although the show has yet to premiere its third season in the U.S., it will start airing January 6, 2013. The fourth season will begin filming 8 episodes this February.
Liza Minnelli will appear as herself in the second season of the NBC show Smash. The episode featuring Minnelli, titled The Surprise Party, will air in the spring. The actress will sing an original song, which Mark Shaiman and Scott Whitman wrote, alongside series star Christian Borley, who plays Broadway composer Tom.
Okay, guys, it's a Glee spoiler. There will be a reunion on the Fox show Holiday episode, December 13th episode Glee Actually, called that because the movie Love Actually inspired it. On that episode, gay couple Kurt and Blaine will reunite. The two will skate together and sing White Christmas when Blaine visits Kurt in New York City.
Next February, Beyoncé will be the subject of a feature-length documentary on HBO. Beyoncé herself directed the film, which will premiere February 16th, less than 2 weeks after her Super Bowl halftime show that will take place on February 3rd.
The documentary Broadway Musicals, A Jewish Legacy, will air on PBS's Great Performances January 1st, 2013. The documentary explores the unique role of Jewish composers and lyricists in the creation of the modern U.S. musical, highlighting the work of Irving Berlin, Jerome Kern, Leonard Bernstein, Stephen Sondheim, and others.
Lindsay Lohan was arrested after allegedly hitting Tiffany Eve Mitchell, age 28, in the face at Avenue Nightclub in Manhattan's Chelsea neighborhood. Lohan was questioned, along with witnesses, at the NYPD's 10th Precinct Station House and charged with misdemeanor third-degree assault. Lohan was issued a desk appearance ticket and is due in court January 11th.
In an interview with ABC News, singing legend Dolly Parton talked about the rumors that she and her longtime friend Judy Ogle have a lesbian relationship. Parton cited a bond with Oprah Winfrey, who's faced the same rumor about friend Gayle King. Gayle, her friend, Judy, my friend, they just think that you just can't be that close to somebody, Parton, at 66 years of age, said. I love Ogle as much as I love anybody in the whole world, but we're not romantically involved.
And the winner of RuPaul's All-Star Drag Race is Chad Michaels. Michaels edged Raven, Jujubee, and Chanel to win the crown along with a supply of MAC Cosmetics, a one-of-a-kind trip, and $100,000.
Actor Larry Hagman has died at the age of 81 due to complications from his battle with cancer. Hagman, the son of singer-actress Mary Martin, appeared in the classic series I Dream of Jeannie, but shot to stardom as J.R. Ewing on the nighttime soap Dallas.
And Silver Linings Playbook, Moonrise Kingdom, and Beasts of the Southern Wild received the most nominations for the Indie Spirit Awards. The Perks of Being a Wallflower is one of the five nominees for Best First Feature. Openly gay scribe Jonathan Lisecki was nominated for Best First Screenplay for Gaby, which is about a gay man and a straight woman who decide to have a baby the old-fashioned way. The Spirit Awards air on ISC February 23rd, 2013. And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
Hey! Hey, everyone! It's Judy Gold. And I know you know this already, but you're on the Windy City Queercast. Don't leave.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Queer.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of December 3rd, 2012, you are in Chicago's Culture Club. Main Stage presents America's favorite drag a cappella beauty shop quartet, the Kinsey Six, in a critically acclaimed holiday concert, Oy Vey in a Manger. Don't miss these divas in drag as they sing beautiful four-part harmonies in their reinterpretations of holiday classics. December 20th at 7 p.m. and 9:30 p.m. Tickets at maynestage.com.
This holiday season, About Face Theater takes over the Steppenwolf Garage for the world premiere musical We Three Lizas. This is one holiday bender you'll want to remember. Doors open to Liza's Lounge at 7 o'clock on show nights, 3 o'clock on matinees for cocktails and crooners. We Three Lizas starts, well, when Liza is good and ready. It's a perfect holiday outing for friends. We Three Lizas runs through December 23rd. For tickets, visit aboutfacetheater.com.
This December, do not miss the extraordinary world premiere of Wasteland, now playing at Chicago's award-winning Timeline Theater. More than 15 critics agree that you should see this show, including Windy City Times' own Jonathan Abarbanel, who praised the honest, remarkable, and totally committed performances of actors Nate Berger and Steve Haggard. For tickets to Wasteland, visit TimelineTheater.com. That's TimelineTheater.com.
The holiday classic returns now in its 36th year. Black Ensemble Theater presents Jackie Taylor's The Other Cinderella, playing now through January 13th at Black Ensemble Theater, 4450 North Clark Street. Everyone is welcome in the kingdom of others, so visit blackensembletheater.org and order your tickets today for The Other Cinderella.
At The Flash, one Pride Films and Plays Great Gay Play Contest this year, and now is running in a full production through December 16th at Center on Halstead's Hoover Leppin Theater. At the Flash is a fierce and funny play that condenses 50 years of LGBT history into a fascinating and thought-provoking one-man play. Visit PrideFilmsAndPlays.com. Don't miss At the Flash at Center on Halstead. And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
Hi there, this is Deb Pierce reminding you it's okay. Go ahead. You're not alone. Post a comment.
Openly gay playwright Philip Dawkins' star is on the rise. After his 2011 hit production, The Homosexuals, ran for an impressive long run and garnered him a Jeff nomination for Best New Work, Philip now finds himself as an ensemble playwright in residence at Victory Gardens Theater. And his latest play, Failure, A Love Story, makes its world premiere at VG now through the end of the year. And he's got some other stuff, too, lined up, even if you're not in the Chicagoland area where you can see his work. Hey, Philip, how are you?
Hey, Amy, I'm good. How you doing?
I am great. You know, I started hearing about you years ago from a number of my different friends, Stephen Rader, Eric Rita, before I ever got to meet you. And I think we had drinks or food or something after going to the Music Box one day. That was the first time I met you. And you were writing and teaching and writing, you know, plays. And then it just seems like, you know, you arrived these past couple of years, and all the work is paying off, and you're getting to flex a different kind of muscle now in your life as an artist and as a writer. Where, you're not from Chicago, are you? Where are you from?
I'm not from Chicago. I'm from Phoenix, Arizona, but I have been here now for almost 15 years. So I'm hoping that qualifies me as being able to say I'm a Chicagoan.
Well, yeah, I'm a little over 15 years, and I feel like a Chicagoan. You know, I think if you've been here 10 years, you're a Chicagoan.
I felt like a Chicagoan before I even arrived here.
Well, I did too.
I was on the plane at 17 years old, flying over here going, I am a Chicagoan. I just felt it.
Well, now, you came here to go to Loyola, right?
Well, yes, I did. I came here to go to Loyola, but I definitely picked Loyola as the school in Chicago that I wanted to go to, mm-hmm. because I knew I wanted to come to Chicago.
Yeah.
Or at least I thought I knew that. You know, at 17, I knew it as much as you knew things, but it just turned out I happened to be right about that I didn't want to stay here.
Do you have an early memory of being in the theater back there in Arizona, like some sort of seminal moment where you went, wow, okay, that can happen and people can experience that on a regular basis?
Oh my God, so many. Well, I was a child actor, so I did that whole thing for years and loved it. I dragged my parents into it kicking and screaming. They had no like idea about the theater, so we all sort of learned together. But
do you want to tell us some of your great childhood roles? Come on.
Oh my good. Well, if I want to be really embarrassed, you can Google Party of Five and my name, and you could probably find a very embarrassing guest stint where I was flirting with Lacey Chabert's character because she had stuffed her bra for the first day of middle school, and it didn't go well for either of us. I was in the Arizona premiere of Marvin's Room, which I would put as one of my favorites. And also, I remember reading about the playwright and that he was from Chicago, and just kind of reading up on that a little bit and thinking, yeah, that's where I'm going to go. That's where I'm going to be from one day, and I'm going to write plays too. Mm-hmm. And it happened, which is kind of amazing.
Do you think Marvin's Room was really that doorway into the concept that you would maybe write in addition to act, or that you would prefer to just write, or when was that?
I was always interested in both, but I thought that I would be an actor who sometimes wrote, and then I just ended up getting the proportions wrong. But it was when I was in college at Loyola, I started writing more, and I had, when I went to Loyola, there wasn't really much in the way of playwriting going on. Like, you could take an elective, but that was pretty much it. So they, when I showed up and said, hey, I'm interested in this thing you don't really offer, but I'm nice and you guys are cool, so maybe you'll do something for me. And they did. And they asked an emeritus professor, Nick Patrika, mm-hmm. who, as it happens, is a Victory Gardens playwright as well. And so now I join ranks with him. They asked him if he would come and be one-on-one with me, more or less, for 4 years. So I feel like I really got personal mentorship for playwriting for 4 years of college, which is unheard of and amazing. And he really shepherded me in a way that showed me, oh, wow, I can do this. And then right outside of school, I got a couple opportunities that gave me full time every day to write. Mm-hmm. And those were my
my sort of experiments to see, can I do this? And I found out that, you know, not only can I write all day, every day, but even that's not enough time.
Mm.
So I came home from those residencies and called my agent and broke up with him and very, very amicably, and then just started writing full time. And I have not missed acting once. I've never looked back and thought, oh, wow, I should be doing that. So yeah. I think that's a confirmation that I made a good decision. And I know tons of writers who do both.
Yeah.
I know tons of actors who do both and do it really successfully. So I don't think it's impossible. It's just for me, for whatever reason, it became all about writing.
Well, so how do you think that, I mean, obviously Marvin's Room, written by the late Scott McPherson, right? Is that right? Is that who wrote Marvin's Room?
Yeah, Scott McPherson.
Openly gay man.
And who was his partner, Danny, right? Danny, oh no, I'm going to get it wrong. What was his partner's name? The activist.
I can't remember.
I don't know.
I did good
I'm
to push my brain cells together. But how do you think, you know, did that play? And as you said, your study of kind of Scott's life. I mean, when did you know you were gay? And when did your sexuality start? You know, how do you get from that early, like, okay, whenever you discovered that you were a gay man to writing, you know, kind of a quintessential story of a decade in a young gay man's life in The Homosexuals?
Wow, that's a big question. And how much time you got? well, I mean, you know, when did you come out?
When did you feel you?
I came out like
knowledge.
Officially when I was 17.
But when did you know?
Oh, 18. Oh, I knew for sure when I was 12. I mean, that's when I stopped even questioning it. But I came from very, very Bibled people.
Yep.
And I came from, I had a very bifurcated childhood because I had my very churched experience, right? I had this very sort of WASPy experience, but then I also had this theater experience.
Yep.
And so on one side, I had all of these terribly unaccepting people who were trying to fill me with bigotry and hate, but couching it in these words of Jesus. And on the other side, my parents were leading me with and trusting me with and telling me to respect all of these, like, flaming homosexuals and people who were creative and who were questioning authority and who were radical and who were major influences in my life and who loved me.
Yep.
And so I, you know, when I left all of that and came to Chicago and came to, you know, school, I was able to look back and go, who were the people who really loved me no matter what?
Mm-hmm.
You know, who were the people who really wanted me to be the person who I was going to grow up to be and not some form of what they had already decided for me?
Yeah.
And it turned out to be all those radical fairies. You know, those are the people who wanted me to blossom.
Yeah.
And so that was rough. You know, coming out long distance to your parents is hard because you're not there every day. So it's easy it's easy to fall into a lot of tricky, out of sight, out of mind patterns and stuff like that. And I have to say it had been a very, very rough experience on me and my parents. But they came around,
yeah.
You know, it took them about 8 years and I thought that they would never come around. And I had older and wiser friends tell me, just give them time. And they were right. And I'm shocked, pleasantly so. And you know,
your story is so similar to mine. I really, I don't think I actually knew that. And I mean, you know, Stephen Cohen and I talked about it as well, who, you know, I think as well, when you have that kind of creative life and also that very, spiritual, faith-based, religious-based life, both that are being kind of supported. You said it fairly pretty eloquently there. So was The Homosexuals, the play that many of us in Chicago, and I know we'll tell her in a minute, there's some more productions of it going to be done in case you don't live in the Chicago area or you missed it, is about this decade of time as a young man moves to Chicago, to the big city, a young gay man. Was this play autobiographical? I mean, is it birthed out of Philip's experience in life?
You know, it is and it isn't. It's autobiographical, but I think not in the way that people think. It's autobiographical in that all seven of those characters are me.
you know,
like, depending on which part of the day you catch me in and whether or not I've had my coffee.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they're all me. I would say that the least me of the homosexuals would be the lead. We meet him, the play goes backwards, we meet him in 2010 and then goes all the way back to 2000 when he's just moved here. So he's a little bit younger than me. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to look at what it meant to be at the very end of Generation Y and be gay at the turn of this century.
Yep.
I wish that we'd had even more open. I mean, there's a lot of writing and a lot of coded writing that was happening around the homosexual experience at the turn of the last century, but you have to dig for it. I'm like, well, I don't want that. I want the people 100 years from now to have something that's just blatant.
Mm-hmm.
Like, here's what we were going through, and here's what we were fighting for, and here's what we didn't even know.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what we were totally unsure of and were afraid of.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to do that. I wanted to look at this, and I also, Evan and I, Evan's the lead character, we share a sort of similar background that we're moving away from. And then from there, it splits off, and we're very different people. Yeah.
So the play was, I mean, as I said, a huge success here in Chicago. It extended, and very long run. It was Jeff nominated for Best New Work. Where else can people see this play? I know it's being done in some other states.
It is. It's being done in Detroit very soon at the Ringwald Theater. And that opens, or it's in Ferndale, which I guess is a suburb of Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
So go Ferndale. It opens November 16th and runs through December 1st. So it actually opens on the same night that Failure, a Love Story starts previews. So
mm-hmm.
I'll be sending congrats and best wishes to two different cities. And then it opens next year, next summer in May, at a theater in Raleigh-Durham called The Man Bites Dog.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that's May 2nd of next year and goes through May 18th. So I'm excited. I have to say I'm super excited for it to open in the South.
Yeah.
Because it's definitely a Midwestern gay experience.
Mm-hmm.
And we get a lot of plays and a lot of literature about, really plays. We get a lot of plays about kind of the New York gay experience or the San Francisco gay experience, but I don't know too many plays about, being right in the heart of the Midwest.
Yeah.
And so that's what this one is. And I'm really interested to see how Southerners take to it. I'll probably learn quite a bit about the play and about myself and about my country.
Well, I think it'll be interesting to have it play on both coasts and also play in the South. And I am sure that it will have that life and be seen from coast to coast. Chicago, we're talking about, you feel like a Chicagoan and this very Midwestern play with the homosexuals. You're the inspiration for your new play, Failure. Chicago is an important part of this play as well. Is Chicago are you trying to give a voice to the Chicago playwright and have Chicago be a setting? Is an important character for you in your plays right now?
For Failure, certainly. Failure, Chicago is one of the main characters, I would say. But actually, I didn't set the homosexuals specifically in Chicago.
That's true.
It never actually says Chicago. The About Face production decided that it was Chicago, and I think that the Ferndale production is deciding that it's Detroit. And I think
interesting.
That's totally smart.
I love
them.
That. I love the universality of that. So, what's the inspiration for Failure? I know it is. If Chicago's a character, tell us the inspiration for Failure, a Love Story.
Okay, so Failure has really two inspirations. One is sort of visual and gimmicky, and the other is a little bit more Oprah. But, we can go there. So the visual one is a friend of mine and I were on a road trip, and we were driving through a cemetery like you do. And I saw this tombstone just kind of jump out at me, and I was like, stop everything. And we got out of the car, and it's just this big headstone, and the only word on it is fail.
Hmm.
This is a gift. This is amazing. So we took all these pictures of it, and then I saw that it was actually, it was a headstone for an entire family plot, and all of the Thale family were in the ground with different grave markers behind it. Mm-hmm. And there was Nellie Thale, John N. Thale, and Roxy Thale, believe it or not. And I knew. I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do with the Thales, but I'm going to do something. Like, I'm not leaving these people in the cemetery. They're coming with me. So I had that in my mind as, what can I do with this Thale family, right?
Right.
And at the same time, I had, here's the Oprah part of it. I just lost some friends to cancer, and I felt like all of my friends were starting to lose their parents and certainly their grandparents. And it was just, I felt like I was just starting to enter that phase of like late 20s, early 30s when people started dying and young people, and I couldn't find a way to be okay with that. Mm-hmm. And I still don't know how to be okay with that, but there has to be some sort of way to live in the joy of that journey and not get bogged down in the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I realized, like, okay, if I'm not going to be miserable all the time, I have to work on some project. I have to explore something about the journey.
Mm.
And it was while I was grappling with that, that this these fails entered my life, and those two things sort of married, and I went, I've got it. I know what it is. I know what my play is about the journey. And for this thing that I wanted to be all about, joy and revitalization and not being bogged down in misery when it's all around you, but pushing through it. Oh, well, that's Chicago.
Yeah.
That's this city. That's this, you know, we're going to burn ourselves down. I don't give a fuck. We're going to come back and we're going to have a great time. You know, like that's Chicago. So it felt right to me.
So it's, would you, you know, if it's a play about loss or, you know, that was generated from headstones. I can't imagine a play of yours not having a bit of quirk and a lot of humor.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yes, it is definitely a lot of fun. And with under Seth Boakley's direction, and Seth is so smart and so fun, both at the same time. And we have an amazing cast who are having a blast with this. And every day they're bringing new proposals and new thoughts and new ideas. And they're like, well, what if this, you know, this snare drum could be addressed and we can blah, 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 blah. And it's just, it's fun. And that was the point. I mean, I should mention the play is very family appropriate.
Uh-huh.
I definitely wanted this to be a piece that you could be perfectly comfortable bringing, you know, your mother or your 7-year-old to. And it's a play about death, you know, I don't think it's a play about death. I think it's a play about knowing that we're only here for a short time and having that be a beautiful fact rather than a scary one.
Well, and I know a lot of the joy and whimsy from what I've read, obviously I haven't seen it yet, but of this piece is the use of music, and music's an important part of your artistic life. You're a co-founder of Chicago Opera Vanguard. What's your relationship to music, and how did music play its way into this play?
Music found its way into Failure, I think mostly through the time period that I set it in. I set it in 1928 in Chicago because it is, you know, it is called Failure, and it's about the joy of never getting what you want. So I thought the joy of never getting what you want felt a lot like where America is right now. And so I went back in time and tried to think, well, when's the last time that we lost everything? And so I thought about the stock market crash and all of that. So I made the lead character an investor, and I made him very successful, and it's 1928. So we know that no matter how well he does in this play, in the very next year, he's going to lose everything.
Right.
But once I got into Chicago in 1928, that's music. You know, the first thing I start to think about is jazz and all of the music that was coming out of Chicago at that time. And I thought it would be a real shame not to explore that, you know, and I certainly did. So we're using a lot of songs from the period as well as instrumentation from the period, and we're playing with the style of singing that was going on then. And also, I wrote 2 new songs.
Woo!
No, that's crazy. I've only ever written songs for my children's plays before, so this will be interesting to see how they fly, especially as I'm trying to match speeds with a certain era.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think it's working, and the cast is being really game about it, so...
It sounds exciting and totally thrilling. So you have a reading also in December, December 15th, one night only, a free reading with the Goodman, mm-hmm. where you've also been a writer in residence as well there. Tell us about the play at the Goodman and how people can attend that show as well.
Well, all the information's up on the Goodman Theater website, and it's part of their New Stages Amplified series. And this was a play that came out of me being a part of the Goodman Playwrights Unit, mm-hmm. and it's called Stutter, mm-hmm. and it has its starting point in a true story. It's again from the Midwest, something that happened in Iowa. Like very pre-World War II, during the time when we were doing all sorts of horrific medical experiments and just really unethical experiments. And this one's about the Monster Study, which was a study conducted by this speech pathologist named Wendell Johnson, who's sort of like the father of American speech pathology. And he wanted to test a theory that stuttering was the result of pretty much just abusive behavior in the home. Mm-hmm. And so the state of Iowa gave him orphans to test out this theory. And, you know, you can pretty much imagine what happened after that and how these kids were treated in the study. And nobody knew. Nobody knew what was going on. Mm-hmm. So anyway, fast forward to like 2001, it became known that this happened because the results of the study were never published. And, of course, because we know stuttering is not a result of, you know, being told that you're stupid or anything like that. It's actually something totally else. But it came out into the open that this is what had happened, and 3 of those children were still alive. They're in their 70s and 80s. Somebody knocks on their door and says, hey, by the way, did you know that this happened to you? Mm-hmm. So Stutter is my, like, fictionalized account of those 3 living orphans who sued the state of Iowa for reparations.
Wow.
And so this is that play about, like, who's responsible for your pain, mm-hmm. and who, and at what time, when is it helpful for you to try to make it better, and when is it actually hurtful to bring mm-hmm. it back up? I certainly don't have any answers, and of the 3 orphans, they have 3 very different experiences with that journey, but
yeah.
I think it's going to be a really, really excellent play with Stuart Carden is directing, and it's going to be great. I'm learning a lot. It's also the first play I've ever written with a deaf character, and that has been like a whole grad school in how to write.
just a whole
education in how to write, and but one that's been very, very worth it, and continuing to learn about that.
You know, it's an exciting city for writers when I hear, like, the breadth of what people will support, you know, these theater companies support and let you explore in writing, you know, that you people don't want you just to write one kind of play, you know, like they just want you to write. And I'm wondering
about Chicago. There's so many different places doing so many different things.
Well,
there's no reason not to support everybody because there's a place for everybody here.
Absolutely. You know? And you've been able to hop around through various homes or associations of teaching and all of this. And I think it's mm-hmm. really thrilling what's going on at Victory Gardens. You know, we have had Che, you, the openly gay artistic mm-hmm. director, openly gay Asian artistic director, you know, and he in this same season has Samuel Hunter's The Whale in the season as well. Mm-hmm. You know, the representations of GLBT people, you know, being on stages more and more, you know, as a playwright who happens to be gay, I won't call you a gay playwright because you're...
Oh, you can go ahead. Honey, I wrote a play called The Homosexuals. I'm a gay playwright now. I mean, like, that's it's done.
It's done. Well, I mean, I know you're a gay playwright, but I just mean you're talking about stories now that, you know, in this, you know, here at the end of 2012 that you're exploring and writing and presenting that, you know, don't necessarily, they're not the homosexuals. And so it's, do you still feel a responsibility that you need to be one of those people to put gay, you know, GLBT representations on stage or queer representations on stage or give those voice? And or is it, you know, are where is the gay play, I guess? You're a playwright, you teach playwriting. Where is the gay play, you know, in our artistic culture today?
God, that's a thesis. The gay play is everywhere. I think for me, you know, as a gay playwright, you know, I don't think I happen to be gay. Like, I am gay.
Yep.
I think it comes out in all of my plays, whether I want it to or not. You know, failure is not what somebody would look at, you know, failure, the play, failure, love story. It's not something that people, I think, would look at and go, oh, that's a gay play. But I think you can recognize a queer sensibility about it and the gayness of the writer. I think it's about love in all forms.
Yeah.
I mean, it's about loving a dog. It's about loving your children. It's about love, you know, and not necessarily having to put a label on those things and not necessarily having to judge them, but just accept them as love. And I think in that way, yeah, I'm a gay playwright. You know, my plays will always have a center to them that say it is okay to love another person. That is the fuel of life. And that is what keeps us going. And that's always going to be there. So I think one of the things that surprised me about Chicago's reception of the homosexuals was how many people came to see it and loved it who didn't identify as gay at all.
Yeah.
And, who, you know, we had such a huge audience following from people who I would never have thought would have even walked through the door. And I think that maybe and hopefully the opposite will be true for plays like Stutter and Failure, that people come and leave and go, you know what, that really had a lot to say about marriage equality, or that really had a lot to say about, you know, the way I look at my grandparents, you know. So I'm hoping that if we keep the honesty of love and the honesty of what it means to love another person at the pillar of writing, and at least in my work, then that'll come through. Where is the gay play in the rest of the world? Good grief. I mean, my students are writing any and every kind of play, and my high school students are very aware of gays, lesbians, bisexuals, transgenders, and queer in their work. Mm-hmm. And it is coming out, and it is coming out with a fierceness. So I am not worried about the future of gay playwriting.
Well, it's exciting, right? I mean, it's exciting that we just are in the fabric. And
absolutely. And that diversity is in the fabric. We have to start giving opportunities and possibilities to every kind of performer.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I think at this point, it's irresponsible not to.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. No, I agree. Well, I hope everybody will go and see Failure, a Love Story, if you live in the Chicagoland area. It's playing now through December 30th at Victory Gardens Theater, 2433 North Lincoln Avenue. And if you want tickets, you can get those by calling 773-871-3000, or you can visit victorygardens.org. Also, you know, look for homosexuals coming to a town near you, especially those of you in the Detroit area and also down there in North Carolina. And if you get a chance and want to come out and see the new play, it's called Stutterer, is that right?
Stutter.
On December 15th at the Goodman. You can check that out as well. And we just look forward to continuing to watch your career thrive, Philip, and all the success that's coming to you. So it's super exciting.
Yay. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me on.
Got something to say? Call us today. 312-21 Be Gay.
Well, everybody, have a great week. We are well into December. What are your favorite things this holiday season? I want to hear about them. Mitchell Fain will be on with me next week. We're going to talk a little bit about Santa Land and also just about the holidays. And don't forget that Scott Duff is performing in We Three Lizas at the Steppenwolf Garage I'm going to see that here tonight. So hopefully I'll have a review of that as well on our next show. Well, not really a review. It'll be a gush because it's Scott Duff and I love him. And he's hilarious. So anything with Liza Minnelli should be good and should be fun and at least should be pretty gay. Have a great week, everyone. Need my baby at Christmas time. Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast, queer and now. Yeah.